Welcome to Local Talk on KHOY Community Radio. I'm your host for today, Ursula Rudenberg, together with Pat Schlarbaum. Thank you for joining us and listening in. I hope your holiday weekend was as good as possible. Mine was.
And I hope you'll have a chance to enjoy the balmy weather temperatures coming out our way this week. Today, at the high of 66 degrees predicted, with a drop to only 44 degrees this evening. Tuesdays should stay in the 50s with a little less sun during the day, but by Wednesday we should see the start of sunny skies with us all the way through Sunday. Day should be in the upper 40s and night should go down to the lower 30s, dipping to around 28 or 29 degrees on Thursday and Friday nights.
And here's a summary of some Iowa news from last week from iowainformer.com. Recently, the Iowa GOP Senate caucus had concluded an internal investigation into allegations of sexual harassment in its office without releasing the report publicly. After a public backlash, Senate Majority Leader Bill Dix released a redacted version of the report on Black Friday. Details in the report include evidence of ongoing harassment and fear of blowing the whistle for fear of retribution, despite Dix's earlier claims to the contrary. On Sunday afternoon, Congressman Steve King, who represents the 4th Congressional District, including Ames and surrounding area, tweeted, "Once affirmative action replaced equal opportunity, our meritocracy went out the window. Merit was replaced by minority qualifiers." King shared a tweet last Wednesday from the account of a white supremacist website founded by Jason Bergkamp, a man who has approved of Adolf Hitler. The account for the website, Defend Europa, tweeted an image of Hungary's far-right nationalistic leader, Viktor Orban, with a quote attributed to him that read, "A nation which expects its biological survival from immigrants won't survive." King shared the image, adding, "Prime Minister Viktor Orban has uttered an axiom of history and of humanity. Western civilization is the target of George Soros and the left." Soros, a Jewish billionaire philanthropist invested in liberal causes in the United States and Europe, is from Hungary. On Sunday night, Time Incorporated announced that it is being purchased for $1.8 billion by the Des Moines-headquartered publishing company Meredith Corporation, which publishes lifestyle magazines including Better Homes and Garden. The deal is backed by the libertarian GOP mega-donors Charles and David Koch for $650 million via their Koch Equity Development private equity company. Time Incorporated publishes major magazine titles including Time, People, and Sports Illustrated. Meredith Corporation runs an apprenticeship program that offers editorial, digital, and graphic design internships in its Des Moines office for students of Iowa State University's Greenlee School of Journalism and Communication. And since 2014, the Koch Foundation has helped to fund Greenlee's First Amendment Day festivities. Finally, ISU dropped its final appeal last week to prevent a student group from using the Psi mascot and other university logos on T-shirts. ISU's student chapter of the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws sued the university for retroactively changing a student group policy to prevent them from making the T-shirts after pressure. Judges repeatedly ruled that ISU administrators violated the students' free speech rights by failing to apply the policy in a viewpoint neutral fashion. In September, an appellate court had ordered ISU to pay the students' attorney fees and related expenses, which total more than $190,000. And those are a few of the stories of Iowa in the news brought to you by the Iowa Informer. You can find more stories at iowainformer.com.
Well, today on Local Talk, we're being joined with Doug Haar, president of Iowa Audubon. You live over in Ogden, from over around Harrier Marsh.
That's right.
Just south of Ogden and along US 30, for those that aren't familiar with that little area to go birding. Welcome, Doug Haar.
Thank you, Pat.
Welcome, Doug.
Well, Doug, we've had an Indian summer, and we have had some migrants turning up. The rough-legged hawks are with us once again. And help me on this. They come down from the Arctic?
Right. They are an Arctic nesting bird, like the snowy owls that are also showing up here.
Oh, a lot of snowy owls.
Yeah,
here.
But the rough-legged hawks are pretty common right now. In fact, I've probably seen a couple of dozen in the last 2 or 3 weeks. So yes, they're down from the Arctic, and the snowy owls are also being seen all over the state right now, from the southern part of the state to the northern corners. So
yeah, let's dig into that. Gosh, when I was growing up, if there was a snowy owl, it almost made the newspaper. It was quite a big thing. And then some years you would see quite a few, and then maybe the next, not so many.
Yeah, they seem to have sort of a periodic eruptiveness. Maybe every 4 to 6 years or so, we seem to get pretty big eruptions of snowy owls.
So eruption is the term when we have an invasion?
Right. When we get these large numbers of Arctic or Northwoods birds that show up kind of in unusually large numbers, though, we would call those eruptions.
What's their prey base up there?
Well, both the rough-legged hawks and the snowy owls up in the north feed on lemmings and just small critters that crawl around on the Arctic.
Well, and typically I think I read where they were somewhat cyclical.
Yes.
The lemming population would go from kind of feast to famine. They'd have a lot. And then I guess when the population would crash, then the snowy owls, rough-legged hawks would be desperate for some food, and here they come.
That's right. In fact, usually when the lemming populations are increasing up there, of course, then the owls and hawks start producing more and more young, so their population grows. And when the lemming population crashes, then there's so many owls and hawks up there that a lot of those have to move a lot further south in order to find something to eat. And it's primarily the younger birds rather than the adults.
As the Arctic, it does thaw somewhat, as that thaw line would project further south, I guess you would have areas where there would be lemmings surviving.
There could be. That would be possible, yeah. I suppose.
Yeah. Well, another critter I've seen that's in this eruptive status would be the red-breasted nuthatches, and people are already seeing them.
They've been around for several weeks. Actually, they come through every year, but some years bigger numbers than others. Of course, they're a Northwoods bird primarily, but there are a few that nest in Iowa and northern Iowa. But they actually will go clear into the southern United States for the winter, but some winters we get bigger numbers of them here and throughout the country, and this may be one of those years for that. In fact, there's a whole bunch of different species that look like they are erupting here this winter, including red crossbills and pine siskins.
And how would you recognize a red crossbill?
Well, they're a reddish-colored bird, at least the males are. The female's a little less colorful, but if you see one of them up close, you recognize why they call them crossbills, because the tips of their bills cross each other like a pair of scissors.
So that's quite a field mark.
Yes, it is. Yes.
Do you know what the adaptation's for, the crossbill?
Yeah, there are two different kinds of crossbills that we see here in Iowa, red crossbills and white-winged crossbills, which are also showing up. And they like to feed on pine seeds in particular, and that would be the red crossbills prefer pine cone seeds, and the white-winged crossbills prefer spruce cone seeds. And what they do is they use that scissor-like bill as a little thing to pry open the scales of the pine, and then they use their tongue to flick out the seed into their mouth. And if you've ever seen them do it, it's with a pair of binoculars. It's really kind of fun to watch them do that.
<That's cute. laughs>
A little bit like our cardinals having black oil sunflower seeds, where they crack into the through the hull and have at it. You mentioned quite a few. Are there still any loons around?
There have been some loons showing up on Sailorville Lake, some of our big reservoirs and lakes, because they haven't frozen yet, so common loons are around. I saw a Pacific loon a few weeks ago down on Sailorville Lake.
Now, how would you recognize that?
Well, they're a little bit smaller than a common loon. In their winter plumage, they can be a little bit difficult to identify at a distance. You have to really pick out some field marks and have a good field guide sometimes to show you the differences in them. In central Minnesota, near where I lived, we had loons nesting on a marshy little lake, and so I could hear them calling through the night up there. So loon has kind of become the icon bird in my life.
Really seems, that's why I bring it up, because, boy, nothing represents wild any greater than the common loons.
My cell phone even rings a loon call instead of a phone.
Oh, there it is. You can bring the boy to Iowa, but you can't take the Minnesota out of the boy, I guess.
So this is a good time to look for birds. Sounds like there's a lot going on.
There is. There's really a lot of northern species down here right now. Of course, you know, in the winter, Iowa can be rather vacant of a lot of species. species of birds. We get so many in the summer, so both migrants and breeders. But yet, with a year like this, where there's a lot of eruption, I think we're going to see more different species of birds than usual this winter.
Uh-huh. Yeah, we had a rough-legged hawk in our backyard.
They are a neat bird. You know, they call them rough-legged hawks because they're the one hawk that has feathers going all the way down the legs.
First, it looked like they were coming from his stomach. It looked like he had a skirt on.
Yes, that's right. But that kind of helps keep their legs warm in the cold climate that they live in.
I was wondering what that was for. So if one wants to watch out for the Arctic owls, where would you look?
Oh, they can show up almost anywhere. There's been a couple of eruptions since I moved to central Iowa a few years ago. I think about 2005 or 2006 there was a big eruption, and then 2012 and 13 there was a big eruption. But I remember seeing one here in Ames at the intersection of Highway 30 and I-35.
Really?
I remember seeing it sitting on top of the DMAC building one day.
They look like they're squinting.
Yeah, they kind of do. And I think that has something to do with their diurnal style of life.
What's diurnal mean?
Daytime. So they live in day. Yeah, they don't have the big wide owl eyes that the other owls do to be able to see at night in the dark. So
they have a prissy look about them.
I suppose you could call it that.
They just swallowed a lemon or something.
Yeah, a little bit. A little bit sad.
So they're not particularly afraid of people, are they?
They are not, because they are from the Arctic where they're not used to people. They are relatively unafraid of people.
Predators, so they're not really
right. And
looking.
They're a diurnal owl, a daytime owl, so they're easy to see if they're not sitting on a pile of snow, which they blend in with.
And you know, noted naturalist here in central Iowa, Roger Hill, he gave me a tip one time that when you're out scanning for them, if you hear a report, like over in Carroll County, I think there was one that turned up, and if there was any snow at all, he would go to the plowed fields where there was a lot of black and white contrast. And he said that's where you should focus. But so often the doggone white plastic bags, you could put the scope on it and think you might be looking at an owl and realize, oh, no, that's just a bag. And then I've seen it just the other way where you go, oh, you know, that looks like a bag out there. Oh, no, that's a snowy owl.
I have done exactly the same thing, and I think most birders do that.
and another field mark, how could you differentiate between the immatures and the adults?
Well, the adult males will be almost completely snowy white. They may have a few little gray or black flecks on them, but the females have some black flecks on the breast and underside, well, over the whole body. And the juveniles, the young owls, really have a lot of almost black flecks all over the body. So you can tell if it's a young or female owl looks quite different than the very white male adult owls.
As there's more and more lemmings because of the climate change occurring up in the Arctic, an owl like a snowy owl or like a great horned owls have one or two young. Snowy owls can have multiple young. So,
yes, I'd have to stop and look it up, but I believe they can have up to about six young in a nest, if I recall right.
And if there's a good lemming population, then you've got five or six survivors as opposed to just the one or two.
Where does a snowy owl make a nest in the Arctic?
Well, it actually nests on the ground in the Arctic, but it is one owl that actually creates a little nest site. It kind of scoops out the gravel a little bit and makes a little depression, unlike any other owl, which usually just steals somebody else's nest, a hawk's nest or something.
Yeah, find a platform.
So the regular owls, like the great horned and the barred owls, they stay all winter. They don't go anywhere.
Yes, they are year-round residents,
We're speaking with Doug Haar, who is president of Audubon.
In your previous work life, you were a member of the Wildlife Diversity Program stationed in the Spirit Lake area. So we're very fortunate to have your expertise here in central Iowa.
The other day, I heard a robin singing. Is that normal that robins are here in winter now?
They are becoming more and more common in the winter, as are bluebirds. And actually, the National Audubon Society is running a new national survey that started a couple of years ago, especially to try to determine the wintering populations of bluebirds and nuthatches. But lots of robins turn up as well. And that may be that those species are wintering further and further north as our climate changes. Mm-hmm. And actually, the local chapter of Audubon here, Big Bluestem Audubon, in Ames, was one of the very first chapters in the country to conduct the new winter bluebird survey.
Mm.
So that those changes are being documented. People call me up. I got a flock of robins, and I think, well, you'll have this. Yeah. You know, that's kind of how they move around.
It's a different sound for November.
It is, such a spring and sound. It's a little unusual to hear them sing, but occasionally you will hear a call or a song from a robin, even at this time of year. Now that they're here in larger numbers, so.
Doug, you're close to Harrier Marsh.
Yes.
If people were heading over to Harrier Marsh, what would they possibly see this time of year?
Well, this time of year, there's still some small numbers of migrating waterfowl. Also, a few things like there may be some late savanna sparrows and things that tend to hang out there through the winter sometimes. American kestrels can still be seen there from time to time. So, it's a place where you can find birds throughout the winter. And, of course, it's a good wintering area for pheasants over there, too.
And a few northern harriers.
Harriers, the marsh is named after that. And then that's a very good place to see the rough-legged hawk in the winter, too, just because of the grassy habitat that they like to hunt there.
For listeners that aren't familiar, it's just south of Ogden, so west of Ames along New Highway 30. And you'll see a fantastic new state area in the last 10 years or so. Doug, we got a lot to talk about. But didn't even touch on the sandhill cranes, 200 sandhill cranes over in Otter Creek Marsh. I guess you're going to have to come back.
Okay.
Does Audubon have activities during the winter?
The individual chapters all do. Mm-hmm. Christmas bird counts, great backyard bird counts, things like that.
And I'm going to list all of those. There's Ames, Sayleville, Carroll County, and Boone later, around Christmas time. So we've got a few weeks, but I'll have those listed on our website. Good. Is there anything else you'd like to share with this young man?
Well, we could talk about all kinds of birds, but I guess we don't have time to do that this morning.
And you were just down in Texas. They have different types of birds down there, right?
They do. They have some beautiful things. In fact, we went to Aransas National Wildlife Refuge and saw whooping cranes down there and got some nice photos of whooping cranes, too. So.
Do they have the wall kind of surveyed out there in Aransas? What's going on with the
wall? They do at Santa Ana National Wildlife Refuge, which we went to, and we actually formed a little protest line on the dike where they're going to build the 32-foot-high wall that will essentially cut off wildlife access, terrestrial wildlife, from crossing back and forth in the wildlife refuge.
Yeah, walls are kind of tough in nature in that regard. Well, thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Doug Haar, resident of Iowa Audubon Society. Thank you for coming by.
Thank you.
Yeah.
In the sand, making music in the grassy slough. Listen to the sound, universal roar as the wind pounds against the shore. There's a flock coming down out of the sky, they're winnowing in the wind. Trees try to argue with the breeze, but you know they're gonna bend. Music in the wind. Music in the wind. Music in the wind. Music in the wind. Cold and gray, November sky. Hang out on the river. Wonder why that restless gale stirs your restless soul. It's got you roving into the wind. The autumn clouds hold the seeds of change, so you're following a path, secret lane, primal call, a thousand swans in a transitory swirl. It's music in the wind, music in the wind, music in the wind, music in the wind.
And you've been listening to Music in the Wind by Hawkman John Strover's Big Blue Sky Band on their album Driftless Groove.
This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. Thank you for listening in. I'm Ursula Rudenberg, one of your hosts for today, together with Pat Schlarbaum. Over the weekend, I sat down to eat with my 20-year-old nephew, Lucas, and the conversation turned to the fact that he is a Bitcoin investor. I have heard enough talk about this around recently. It comes up in various conversations with people that I know, but no one I've ever talked to has a good grasp on this new world of finance. So the conversations always kind of ended up with, so what are those things, really? So anyway, Randy Wright, my brother-in-law, is a computer programmer, and he's well aware of upcoming technology. So the next morning, at my request, he and Lucas headed down to KHOI Studios to record this interview to bring you a glimpse into the world of cryptocurrencies. I hope you enjoy their conversation.
I'm Randy Wright. I'm here with Lucas Rudenberg from Ames. Now, Lucas has been investing in cryptocurrencies. We were having a talk at Thanksgiving dinner all about cryptocurrencies, and we noticed that it's very volatile. The price today, recently, of a Bitcoin is $8,200 and something, maybe tomorrow it could be $5, it could be $10,000. And people are talking about this stuff, so we wanted to go over it a little bit and get an overview of cryptocurrencies. Lucas, can you tell me, what is a cryptocurrency?
Well, cryptocurrency is a digital currency that was created pretty much to transfer value from one person to another anywhere in the world digitally with no third party involved, no bank in the middle.
Can you give me some examples of current existing cryptocurrencies?
Yes, obviously the number one big one is Bitcoin right now, and that was the first one. And the number two right now is probably Ethereum. It's a pretty big one, made some huge developments in the cryptocurrency kind of sphere. And then there's a few others, Ripple, Litecoin. Litecoin was the second one to be created, I think. There's hundreds, if not thousands, of these.
The so-called inventor of Bitcoin is a Japanese guy named Satoshi Nakamoto, and he released a paper in 2008 in the aftermath of the financial meltdown, and he launched some software in January of 2009. In 2010, he open-sourced the software and handed control of the network alerts to a guy named Gavin Anderson. And then he basically disappeared. Nobody's been able to identify him, though somebody came forward whose name was Craig Wright, an Australian who's not related to me, and he identified himself as Satoshi Nakamoto. Lucas, today, how do cryptocurrencies come into existence?
Computers digitally mine by solving equations for these bitcoins. Nice. And when they solve the equation with the correct answer, they are rewarded with a bitcoin. Or, you know, however many Bitcoin. As time goes on, as more Bitcoins are mined, the difficulty increases.
Oh. Who makes cryptocurrencies?
Anybody can really make a cryptocurrency. It takes some programming and software and hardware knowledge in that sphere to really get this thing going if you want to. But it's not impossible with people who have knowledge in this area.
And the people who do this, is this the people that they refer to as miners?
Well, yes. Miners are basically the driving force behind cryptocurrency's life. So think of Bitcoin as gold, right?
Okay.
Back when they were mining gold, you had to work for the gold. You didn't just go and pick it up off the ground. You know, you had to move way out west, and you had to buy your pans and whatnot and go sift in the river and dig and mine for it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why it was valuable, because it took work and time to get the shiny gold, right?
Mm-hmm.
So mining Bitcoin is basically using a computer to solve an equation, a really hard equation. And so that's the work and time being put in, and mm-hmm. it costs money mm-hmm. to set up these mining operations.
So what kind of computer would you have to be a Bitcoin miner?
Miners that set up these operations that are solely for mining cryptocurrencies, mm-hmm. they only have the bare bones.
So they're not going to use it for anything else anyway.
Right? Yeah, no. Yeah. They only have the basic components that they need from a computer. Graphics card, motherboard, maybe a monitor to interact with the computer mm-hmm. and power supply, obviously. You can pretty much use any computer, like your typical computer could mine Bitcoin. Uh-huh. It might not mine it very fast or very, you know, it might not be very powerful in the mining. You might not get any Bitcoin at all, but any computer can do it. But if you're a miner with a legitimate mining operation going on, you've got just the bare basics.
That's very interesting. Who is it that's actually using cryptocurrencies, and what are they using it for?
Well, I'd say a large percentage of the user base are investors or traders, people that have bought these cryptocurrencies not with the intentions to actually use them as a currency, but to trade them and to make profits off of the price fluctuations.
You said it was mostly investors. Are there any other people, any other reasons why you would do it?
Well, yes, probably the biggest one is illicit use. It's no hidden secret that cryptocurrencies are well optimized for the black market, people looking to buy and sell illegal things.
Uh-huh.
That is a driving factor, and that's kind of why the mainstream markets have kind of eased away from it a little bit.
I see.
Because it is linked to illicit activities.
Well, I heard that your transactions are not anonymous, that you have some kind of a name or something on the blockchain-type ledger thing, whatever that is. Suppose I was at like a foreign government, I wanted to buy tanks and illicit arms, and I wanted to do it anonymously. Is there a way to do that? Do I make a fake account or something?
To make an account on the blockchain, which is really just an address, you don't need to have a name or an address, like a physical home address. You don't need any of those to make it. So it's pretty anonymous, but it is on the blockchain. It's all on that distributed ledger. Uh-huh. So all of the transactions are there on the ledger. But just because they're there doesn't mean you can know who it is.
Oh, I see.
You can follow money, but you can't follow the people behind that.
Oh, okay.
Or you can't buy a tank from somebody, like you said.
Uh-huh.
You don't know what I bought or who I am that bought it, but you know that that money went from one address to another.
Okay.
There are some cryptocurrencies actually that are making headway into the anonymous side. That's kind of their focus on not being able to trace transactions and whatnot. But there are people who are cryptocurrency enthusiasts that would like to see cryptocurrencies make the next step in culture. And they are trying to, you know, use these things to purchase goods and services. And I know some online vendors currently accept things like Bitcoin. Some now are accepting Ethereum a little bit. But yeah, I'd say most of the people that hold these cryptocurrencies are investors and traders.
Uh-huh.
It's just a peer-to-peer payment system, really.
Uh-huh. How do you go about getting some, if I wanted to buy some Bitcoins or something or some Ethereums, how do I go and do that?
Well, the easiest way and the most legit way would be to use an exchange website. The most popular one being Coinbase right now. So you would go on to Coinbase.com, create an account, and then from there you could link your bank account and you could market buy and market sell.
So if I wanted to put $400 or $500 into it, I couldn't go buy a whole Bitcoin. Can I buy like a share in one, or how does that work if I don't have enough to buy a whole?
You can basically buy as little as you want. Bitcoin and pretty much all other cryptocurrencies are divisible up to 8 digits, and so you can buy 0.00001 Bitcoin if you'd like.
So what is the concept, what is this thing of a wallet? People have mentioned that you have a cryptocurrency wallet. What is that?
Just think of it like a bank account pretty much, or even a physical wallet in your back pocket. It's basically just an address on the blockchain, which is the technology behind Bitcoin.
Mm-hmm.
But so it's an address on the blockchain that belongs to a person or an entity. And for each wallet, there is a private key, which is kind of like a password. And that's how you open the wallet. So if you create a wallet on the blockchain, you have a private key for that wallet. And you can open that wallet and access the contents just like a cash wallet or a bank account.
So if I go to this place that you were talking about, Coinbase, is it?
Yeah.
And I buy some currency, stick it in my wallet, and then I decide I want my cash back. Is it easy to sell my cryptocurrencies?
Yeah. So the Coinbase makes it easy for the typical consumer. Like I said, you can market buy and market sell. And so if you decide, hey, I want to sell my Bitcoin now, mm-hmm. and you have it on your Coinbase account, you just market sell, and that money gets sent right back into your bank account that you have linked to that Coinbase account.
So do you personally have some of these cryptocurrency things yourself?
Yeah, I've got my spread of the few. I have a few. I have Bitcoin, some Ethereum. I've also got a little bit of the other no-name cryptocurrencies.
I see. And have you been able to make any money, or have you lost any money? What's it been like?
Yes, I've been pretty fortunate, I'd say. I started in January of 2016, and I threw in my first $500, and I put that right into Ethereum at the time. And then in the next few weeks, I put in another $600. So I originally invested $1,100 of my own personal money. And right now I'm sitting at just over $15,000.
Whoa, that's incredible.
So in under 2 years, or a little under three years, that's pretty good returns.
Yeah, it is.
That's a college kid.
I got to admit. Okay, I think we have an overview of cryptocurrencies, and I hope you've enjoyed our presentation. Thank you, Lucas. This is Lucas Rudenberg.
Thank you.
And I'm Randy Wright. Thank you, and we'll talk to you later.
Thanks to Lucas and Randy for that glimpse into the world of cryptocurrencies. Don't I have a smart family?
Yeah. I learned so much.
This is what Thanksgiving dinners are for. I want to make an announcement about a new project of KHOI that I want to invite I'm referring to you, the listener at this point. Want to invite you to, if you're interested in this type of thing, we're starting a new program called Soundscapes, which is a fine art division of a new project of KHOI called the Audio Lab Learning Center, where we're teaching folks audio production. And the Soundscape program is actually with a grant from the Ames City Council on the Arts. And it provides training and production for sonic art and audio ecology studies. So this is for people who are interested in the art of audio. And in particular, we're focusing on environmental sounds, environmental meaning both natural and physical, human sounds of our community. And so to accommodate this, we've just finished upgrading our production studios. We have a brand new studio, which is really beautiful. It has new equipment, and we're
Janet Kloss.
The Janet Studio. Kloss Studio, yes. And we're developing a curriculum for monthly classes in audio ecology and sound gathering. And so we are inviting you to these classes. They begin in November. They begin November 29th. There's going to be about 10 classes, and you don't have to go to all of them. You can pick and choose which class you want to go to. We're asking for $5 per class. And they'll be here at KHOI at 410 Douglas at 6 o'clock in the evening, starting November 29th, and there'll be one workshop a month. So the best way to get involved is to write to khoiradio@gmail.com, and it should be lots of fun.
Oh, yeah.
Teach you how to do sound gathering, and then also out of the audio that we gather with your help, we'll be making 15-minute radio programs that will be aired regularly on KHOI on a weekly basis. And at the end of the year, we're going to take the sound that was gathered throughout the year and hire composers to perform an original piece of music to be performed with the sound. So it should be lots of fun. And again, if you're interested in being involved, we'd love to have you. If you want to just try it out for one time on November 29th is the first time we're going to do it. And just write to khoiradio@gmail.com to get involved.
Boy, this is fantastic. What a great way to strengthen community through communication.
Yeah, it should be lots of fun. Lots of fun. Yeah.
And this is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. And my name is Pat Schlarbaum, today with Ursula Rudenberg. And we've just been joined with Allison Walter from the Ames Convention and Visitors Bureau. And great to have you with us, Allison.
Well, thank you. Glad to be here.
So, Allison, you have a full agenda for December.
We
can see that.
We do.
I'm actually a little frightened of the paper you have in front of you.
Oh, my God. So four pages here, yeah.
So let's do it. December.
Sure. Well, we've got lots going on. You know, the holidays are officially underway.
Officially,
so
yes.
This weekend, the Boone and Scenic Valley Railroad kicked off their Santa Express train. And they'll be continuing with trains on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday each week through December 17th. Friday trains leave at 6 p.m., Saturday trains at 10:30, 1, 3:30, and 6, and Sunday trains at 1 and 3:30. And the train leaves from the Boone and Scenic Valley Railroad Depot and heads to the North Pole.
Oh.
And while you're headed to the North Pole, you'll hear stories from Santa and sing some holiday songs and lots of fun family activities. Enjoy some hot chocolate, and children will get to meet and greet with Santa himself. So arrive in your pajamas and enjoy the ride, which has become a wonderful tradition for families across Iowa.
So lots of time with Santa.
He's yes.
He's a captive audience.
And they do suggest that you call ahead for tickets mm-hmm. because the trains do sell out. And remember that the train departs promptly, so be there on time.
Mm-hmm.
Also on the train theme, Ryman Gardens has a wonderful new exhibit in the conservatory. And they have the train set up that they had last year. But, of course, every year they have an opportunity to add new pieces. And I believe it's the Marston Water Tower is the new piece that they've added to the train, which travels around the conservatory. So it's lots of fun. And they're doing some extended holiday hours, open until 8 p.m. on Thursdays. The gift shop open and some specials there. So you can enjoy the outdoor lights as well as the butterfly wing mm-hmm. and everything inside.
Mm-hmm. And also the world's largest gnome.
Yes.
Elwood,
the world's largest concrete gnome, is at Ryman Gardens. They're doing a crafty cocktail night on Thursday evenings, and they'll do a fun creative project each week while you can sip on your adult beverages. So bring those, and they'll have some snack. And those are Thursday evenings from 6 to 8 p.m. They'll be doing holiday gardens, door swags, and some last-minute stocking stuffers on the 21st. Thursday nights, also the Main Street businesses will be open late for holiday shopping. And so you can mingle on Main Street with a number of the stores being open and having special deals and treats. This is all part of their Snow Magic events for the holidays. Coming up this week, the Art Mart holiday sale. And this is at the Campanile Room at the Memorial Union. Browse a room full of functional and decorative pottery, brilliant blown glass, beautiful jewelry, campus photos, everything made by Ames and ISU artists. The ISU Theater is putting on their holiday production December 1st through the 3rd and the 8th through the 10th. This is at Fisher Theater, and this year's show is A Christmas Carol. So the beloved journey. It is an ambitious show.
Yeah.
Wonderful adaptation by our own Jane Cox of the novel by Charles Dickens.
Mm-hmm.
You can get tickets at the door at the Stevens Auditorium ticket office or online at Ticketmaster. Friday and Saturday shows are at 7:30, and then they do a matinee on Sundays at 2:00. December 2nd through the 17th, the Iowa Arboretum is celebrating their Winterfest, and they're open Monday through Friday, 9 to 4, Saturday, 10 to 4, and Sunday, noon to 4. And it's some of the best Iowa-grown Christmas trees at the Iowa Arboretum.
Oh, I think so.
Each tree is decorated by local clubs, schools, and organizations, and this is free and open to the public. So some beautiful decorated trees at the Iowa Arboretum. Bergies does their open mic night, and this is becoming a real fun event on the last Friday of every month. Enjoy some live music at their open mic night, and they start sign-ups around 6:30, performances around 7, and of course they like to give priority to performers who haven't performed before so that everyone gets a chance, but a lot of regulars that come, so there'll be no shortage of performers. And it's a family-friendly environment down at Bergie's on Airport Road. And they'll be serving espresso and coffees and teas.
It's down by Lowe's, right?
Right, down there mm-hmm. by Lowe's. So mm-hmm. that's 7 to 9 on the last Friday of each month.
Sounds like fun.
And a couple of great shows coming up here at Iowa State Center this month. The Stevens Auditorium box office is where you can get your tickets or our Ticketmaster. And they have the Nutcracker Ballet coming up on the weekend of December 9th and 10th. Shows on Saturday at 1:30 and 7:30 and Sunday at 1:30. Of course, the classic holiday Nutcracker show. This is an annual production. I believe this is 36 years, I think, if I remember wow. correctly. Choreographed by Robert and Miyoko Thomas of the Robert Thomas Dance Center. They'll have more than 200 local dancers from Ames and the surrounding communities. And they always bring in guest principal dancers performing the roles of the Sugar Plum Fairy and her Cavalier. So a wonderful annual performance. And you can also join Clara and the Mouse King for tea on December 9th at 4 o'clock. And so that's after the afternoon show, before the evening show, 4 o'clock on December 9th. And you do need tickets for that as well, so buy those ahead of time. And then on December 20th, we have Mannheim Steamroller performing at Stevens Auditorium. Grammy Award winner Chip Davis will direct and co-produce this Magic Space Entertainment. The show features classic Christmas hits from Mannheim Steamroller and all the dazzling multimedia effects in a wonderful setting of Stevens Auditorium. This is the 33rd anniversary of their Christmas tour, and their first album was released in 1984. So it's a wonderful show, one of the longest running tours in the music industry. December 20th at 7:30. Mm-hmm. So lots going on here in the next few weeks.
Got some natural things like the Arboretum.
Yes.
Then you've got some music and art.
Yes. And we've got a nice variety.
Some business mm-hmm. and theater.
A little bit of everything.
Yeah. So it sounds like lots of fun.
Yes. And there's more things on the calendar that I didn't get to with this list. So you can check out our website, which is thinkames.com.
Say that again.
Thinkames.com. Mm-hmm. And you'll see our full event calendar. And you can also follow us on social media. On all different social media, check out sightsofames.com, which is named for Cy, our favorite mascot.
C-Y.
So it's C-Y-T-E-S of Ames dot on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and Instagram.
So again, if your family is coming from out of town,
no shortage of things to do to keep them busy.
The place to look for activities is
thinkames.com. Yes.
Thank you so much, Allison.
Thank you.
I appreciate you coming.
Yeah.
And sounds like quite a month ahead of us. Ames is Ames and surrounding area.
Yes.
Is preparing for the holidays. And again, we have a Christmas tree on Main Street, of course.
Yes, yes. They did the Christmas tree lighting a couple of weeks ago, and it's always fun to get out and shop on Main Street and at all the local businesses.
Okay, thank you so much.
Thank
you. Appreciate you coming by.
In the sand, making music in the grassy slough. Listen to the sound, universal roar as the wind pounds against the shore. There's a flock coming down out of the sky, they're winnowing in the wind. Trees try to argue with the breeze, but you know they're gonna bend. Music in the wind. Music in the wind. Music in the wind. Music in the wind. Cold and gray, November sky. Hang out on the river.
Again, that's Big Blue Sky. Just love that music, Pat. That's a local musician.
Well, John Stravers, local friend, but kind of from the Driftless area, which is northeast Iowa.
Beautiful
was,
Driftless
yeah,
area.
Yeah, drifted over.
drifted over. Just reiterate again that we are – just want to that we're having these soundscape workshops, I want to really emphasize this. You're invited. I'm speaking not to Pat right now, but to you, the listener. We're having the soundscape labs, which are starting on November 29th, which I think is Thursday evening.
Sounds about right.
It's going to be here at KHOI. You are invited. This is if you're interested in doing audio production, and particularly if you're interested in doing using it creatively as an art for the joy of how things sound. And Becca Reuter, our assistant station manager, is going to be leading the project, and she's busily making a sound map on the wall right now of Ames. And there's going to be assignments. We're going to be asking you to go out and gather sounds around the environment of Ames, and it should be lots of fun, and then put these together into audio that we actually put on the air. So we're kind of excited about a new experimental project and really want to make sure that you know about it. We are charging a $5 fee to come to the class, and hopefully that is something that interests you, because I think it's an exciting new project for KHOI. It's part of our efforts. We're beginning to make audio production more available to the community, that anybody wants to learn audio production, whether it's to do, you know, creative projects like this, or whether it's to make podcasts, or just generally interested in how to do audio production. So you're invited, and it starts. Our first class is going to be November 29th. There's going to be one a month, and you can go to one or all of them, however you feel. The best way to get involved is to contact us at khoiradio@gmail.com and say, I'm interested in the Soundscapes project. And again, thanks to the Ames Council on the Arts for making this possible with their funding.
And Doug Hart, with the president of Iowa Audubon, there was some mention of the Christmas bird counts. Could you give us a little background on how long and why the Christmas bird counts were established and their merit?
We just heard a whole litany of things that you can do in December, and this is definitely one of the things that happens
right
every December. Yeah,
yeah. It all started, I'm thinking around 110 years ago out in the mountains of Pennsylvania. And it was kind of a thing, instead of going hunting at Christmas, the bird watchers out there thought they ought to start doing bird counts. And that has been a tradition of the National Audubon Society now for over a century. And I think there's over 30 Christmas bird counts run in Iowa right now, at cities or in counties all around the state.
So it is kind of a form of hunting. You just end up
you're hunting,
counting
yeah,
instead of shooting.
For birds to put on your list, that's right.
So it has the aspect of a hunt.
Yeah, it kind of does.
People head into the woods in droves, right, looking for these?
Well, yeah, we team up. We team up and split our survey areas into different parcels, and each team gets to try to walk all the public land that they can there, and also even drive through town and count birds at bird feeders and everything else. So
this actually serves a scientific function.
Yes, it does. It is actually the longest-running scientific survey, a citizen science survey, in the history of the United States. And in wildlife, yeah.
And has it made a difference?
It has. It has really provided a lot of information on where birds are spending the winter, what sort of numbers they are they declining? So, yes, it's a very important survey. And again, you know, one of the longest ones ever run in this country.
Yeah, and for instance, we were talking about robins earlier, that I remember when they started showing up and became somewhat common, unique, but common on the Christmas bird counts, and the bluebirds also.
Right.
Will there be other species that kind of come and go that you might be targeting this year, like with maybe northern shrikes?
Certainly things like that are always of interest, and that's a bird that comes down from the north woods in the Arctic area and spends the winter in Iowa, although we don't see as many of those as we used to because of the loss of habitat in Iowa.
People that do this tend to really enjoy it. I mean, they become, you know, diehards.
They are addicted to it.
They're usually addicted to it.
I certainly am.
Yeah.
So why is it so addictive?
Well, it's just fun. In the winter, when there aren't as many birds around and you don't have as many opportunities to go out on a nice day to go bird watching, it's something that people just like to do as a big all-day activity.
So, and they get together and there's a potluck afterwards.
Right.
So it has this social dynamic.
Right, it does.
And the children return home to visit. And it's a nice activity.
Yeah.
So if you want to try it, what do you do?
You can just contact the local Audubon chapter here, Big Blue Stem Audubon.
Yeah, that'd be Shane Patterson.
Right.
And we'll have these on our website for the Christmas Bird Count in Ames is Saturday, December 16th. And you can be assigned or you can kind of follow your own program if you know Big Blue Stem Audubon members. The following day at Sailorville, Steve Densmore has historically come up with probably one of the richest bird numbers at that Sailorville count.
Right.
It's big. It's also, and that's December 17th on Sunday.
That's also one of the places where you will see the most bluebirds and robins in the winter is around Sailorville Lake.
Yeah, and snow buntings too. Matt Wetrick over in Carroll County has his Tuesday, December 19th. So they're called Christmas bird counts, but I guess you see where I'm going with this. They're Christmas season. But the one that has been shifted from New Year's Day at Boone is now held each Saturday, December 30th. And Alex Kretzinger, I'm not familiar with that young man. Maybe I should invite him over.
Relatively new to taking over the count from Mark Wiederlichner, who used to be the coordinator.
He started it. It really goes to show that these long traditions, it is nice to see a new name, a younger person. And as you travel the gravel, you'll be like Doug Haar and watch for those rough-legged hawks on the fence posts, snowy owls.
Mm-hmm.
Great to have you with us, Doug. Thank you.
Doug Haar, president of Iowa Audubon Society, and you've been listening to Local Talk. I've been one of your hosts for this hour, Ursula Rudenberg, together with Pat Schlarbaum. Thank you for joining us. Earlier in the show, we also heard from Randy Wright and Lucas Rudenberg, giving us information about bitcoins, as well as a roundup of some of the Iowa stories from last week from Iowa Informer, iowainformer.com.
Today's show was engineered by Cynthia McClure. Thank you, Cynthia. And our theme song, as always, is Backtracking by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. You also heard Music in the Wind by Big Blue Sky from the Driftless Groove. Local Talk airs at 7 a.m., noon, and 7 p.m. here on KHOI at 89.1 FM. Also remember that you can also hear KHOI live online at khoifm.org. You will also can be directed to the archives of this show and our homepage as soon as our webmaster is able to post it with our guests and information you have heard during the program.
Please remember that you, the listener, are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. Have a great holiday season, and thank you for listening, and we will see you again on the radio.
KHOI is funded in part by the Ames Chamber of Commerce. Find job opportunities throughout Ames and Story County at workinames.com. Again, that's workinames.com.
Support for KHOI comes from Stevens Auditorium, presenting the 37th Annual Nutcracker Ballet on Saturday, December 9th and 10th. Tickets and more information can be found at center.iastate.edu.